happy holidays, and welcome to the last 2020 episode of The Sun on the Strip. I am Brock Radke, entertainment writer and columnist for the Las Vegas Sun, and despite the unpredictable circumstances the year brought, I have found a way to keep bringing you this weekly podcast with news from the Las Vegas Strip and a hopefully thoughtful interview with the performers and personalities that make Vegas entertainment so fabulous. Just looking back on it now, I put together a pretty good streak when the Strip shut down to fight the spread of the coronavirus back in March. I had interviews then with Shania Twain, George Wallace, Dionne Warwick, Frank Marino, and Matt Franco. And then I started doing two shows a week to stay connected to the industry and keep you in touch with all things Vegas. I also had some great conversations this year with illusionist Chris Angel, Sean Stockman from Boys to Men, burlesque star Melody Sweets, drag star Derek Berry, America's Got Talent finalists Brett Loudermilk and Alan Silva, Magic Dragon, Piff the Magic Dragon, and many more outstanding Vegas entertainers. And the cool thing is you can go back and listen to all these episodes whenever you want. Everything is at lasvegassun.com/podcasts, and you can also listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts. I think I have the perfect interview today to close out the year. But before we get to that, let me give you a little bit of Vegas show news since things continue to change rapidly during this wild holiday season. On Sunday, the governor of the state of Nevada extended the restrictions put in place 3 weeks ago, meaning the maximum capacities for showrooms and theaters on the Strip remains at just 50 people. So pretty much all of the shows that went on hold are going to stay on hold and take a break until at least January 15th. That includes all the MGM Resort shows like David Copperfield, Jabberwockies, Fantasy Carrot Top, and Terry Fader's show that was supposed to do a holiday season run at New York, New York. His gig has been canceled, but his spokesperson told me this week that he'll look to make up those dates in the first part of the new year. Absinthe was one of a few shows that was soldiering on with that small audience of 50, but producers Spiegelworld have decided to throw in the towel for now, and they're hoping to bring back Absinthe and maybe Atomic Saloon show at Palazzo as soon as possible in 2021, but they need bigger audiences to make that work. Piff the Magic Dragon, whose comedy and magic show reopened at Flamingo at the end of October, also took a break 3 weeks ago, but Piff is now bringing his cast and crew back to action this week to perform in front of those smaller audiences at the Flamingo Showroom. A few other Caesars Entertainment shows are also continuing, including Tape Face and X Country at Harrah's and Extravaganza at Bally's. Meanwhile, outside of the big casino resorts, but still on the Strip, Mosaic Theater is continuing its trifecta of shows, and I'm working on a story all about what's going on there. You can read all about it Monday at lasvegassun.com. If you really want to know what's happening on the Strip, what's open, what's closed, what it's like to be here right now, and I'm talking about shows, but also restaurants, bars, shopping, gambling, everything, there's another place you're going to want to be, and that's Las Vegas Magazine. I contribute to Las Vegas Magazine, as well as our other online and print publications here at Greenspun Media Group, but LVM is really dedicated to the Strip more than any other media outlet you'll find anywhere. And the Las Vegas Magazine crew has been dropping this really beautiful digital edition almost all year long. In the old days, the pre-pandemic days, you'd have to be in Vegas in your hotel room to see this magazine, but now you can subscribe and get it every week as well as additional digital content. It's really amazing, and mega props to the LVM team for holding it down this year. You can subscribe for free right now at lasvegasmagazine.com. Penn and Teller have been playing Vegas longer than anybody else who's playing Vegas these days. They're icons here and everywhere else. There's no other act like Penn and Teller in comedy or in magic, on TV, anywhere else. And they haven't performed since March. Their Vegas home base, the Rio, is finally going to reopen. It's the last Caesars Entertainment Resort to do so next week. But we're going to have to wait and see when Penn and Teller will return to their long-running and wildly popular residency show there. I had the great opportunity to speak with Penn Jillette this week on Monday, about bringing the show back, but also what they've been up to lately, namely filming a new season of Penn and Teller Fool Us for the CW network while in a bubble at the Rio. And if you know Penn, you know he has a lot to say about a lot of different topics. So we discussed the pandemic. We talked about its effects on Vegas and on the country at large. We talked about Trump a little bit. And Penn has some interesting insights since he was a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice years ago. We talked about a lot of stuff, and it was fascinating for me. I consider Penn Jillette really sort of a leader in the Vegas entertainment world because he's just so articulate and outspoken, and he's just lived a life, a really unique life and career, and he has a perspective on things that I think needs to be heard. A little bit of a warning, there's going to be a few more naughty words than you'll usually hear in this podcast, but it'll be okay. You'll be fine. Here's my conversation with Penn Jillette.
I believe Penn and Teller Fool Us just got renewed for an 8th season, unless I'm mistaken. So congratulations on that.
You are not mistaken. It is not fake news. It is good journalism. We have another season, and thank you.
In the beginning, did you expect that show to become such a force?
Well, it's kind of nutty because the show wasn't. You know, it was bought by Americans didn't want it, and then the Brits bought it, and we did one season in Britain, and it did well. But it was on Saturday night against really heavy hitters and didn't do well enough. So then they dropped it, and it languished for like 2 years until CW picked it up kind of like on a whim, you know, for very low fee to kind of say, well, what the hell, we can't go wrong. And then it kind of found its feet after that. So it's an odd kind of – it wasn't ever really loved by the people that bought it. It had to kind of grow on people. We were optimistic about it. You know, what I was so taken with the idea that Teller and I, we talked about the most was trying to do a performance show that had kindness involved. You know, we were both so bothered by the shows where people who don't really know art pontificate about an artist. And occasionally, you know, not all the time, cruel ways, and often with a backstory that's supposed to be more interesting than the art. And I've always been one, trust the art, not the artist. And I mean, it's wonderful and moving that someone's grandmother has cancer and wants to see them do a show, but there's also the show. And what we wanted to do was put the emphasis on the actual performance and also not claim any sort of godlike predictive qualities. I mean, in a certain sense, it is a very, very objective show. We are not asking, are you good? Are you funny? Are you going to be a superstar? What should your performance style be? We are asking, do we know how the motherfucking trick was done? And if the answer is yes, you win. If the answer is no, you lose. But everybody knows that premise is jive. I mean, we completely stick to it. We play completely fair. We don't know who's coming on. We try to be as meticulous as we can, but everybody knows it's just an excuse to do live magic on a shiny floor.
Your whole crew, you guys did the bubble thing at the Rio to film the season that I guess just aired and is going to continue to air next month.
Yeah, I think it starts shortly. I don't think it's quite aired yet, but yeah, we did that all. You know, it was The Shining. Was walking through a vacant hotel with your bathrobe on, you know, just crazy. Turns everybody into Rodney Dangerfield.
Was the actual production experience vastly different from how you normally have done the show?
Yes. But, you know, we had, I don't know the exact number, but probably a third of the acts were actually in the room with us, and they were distanced. and checked. You know, we did, with crew and magicians and us, we did over 660 COVID tests, every one of them negative. I guess we're more proud of that than the whole season. We were very careful, and we put people's safety at a premium. But and also no audience. I mean, we had a virtual audience watching us, but no live audience. And, you know, I would have told you before we started the season that we needed an asterisk next to it to say that it was done during COVID. But I think it turned out to be one of our best seasons. And I don't really understand why it shouldn't have been. But I think part of it was that we were able to get all these acts that couldn't be on Fool Us before. You know, if we are talking to a magician in Beijing and they have a wonderful big stage illusion, and we say how much to do that in the U.S., and they say, well, shipping is going to be $35,000. Well, we can't do that. But with the COVID, I use this word advisedly, excuse, we were able to just send cameras and shoot big illusions all over the world that look really beautiful. I don't want to confuse you. When I say we, I'm not talking about me at all. We are not part any way, shape, or form in the booking of the acts. We can't be. So I was sitting there rather surprised. God damn, that's a big illusion from China. Oh, I guess we can do that now because we don't have to ship them to the studio.
And you and Teller also created a holiday special that's going to be on the CW this week. What can we expect from that show?
Well, this is the rebroadcast. This is what we did for last year. And they're playing it more. And we did a, the holiday special was a participation trophy special. We, in the holiday spirit, we did not judge. Everybody got a trophy. And that allowed us to have people on that, that because of where they were in their career or because of other things, did not want to compete in the proper show. So the Christmas special ended up being really, really good. And then I also got to wear a Santa suit for the whole show. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, that makes me even more excited about it, that it was filmed before all this. So then there'll be no trace of this year, which is what we need right now.
Absolutely. Although I think you'll find it's remarkable, but I think you'll find in the season we shot during lockdown, first of all, we didn't mention it at all, and people are unmasked because of distances and the ventilation. And I think it's a pretty happy series or pretty happy season that's not encumbered by the sadness of the pandemic.
So as of now, as far as I know, the Rio is set to reopen next week on December 22nd. And I believe that you guys do not have a solid date as of yet for the return of your show there.
That's right. We don't. You know, Teller's kind of buddies with Sisolak. And, you know, you couldn't be in a worse position. And, well, except maybe being a hotel owner. And, I mean, everybody, it's so bothersome that battle lines are being drawn, whereas there's no battle at all except the battle for hell. And we will do what seems the most prudent with the best advice we can get and open up when and how we can do it without jeopardizing our audience. And that is not a simple answer. And every day the landscape changes and the more science comes in. And I don't need to tell you how badly I want to do live shows. And I also don't need to tell you how badly I want people to be safe. And I believe I share both of those things with every entertainer.
Yeah. I know you guys are always tinkering with your show, adding new stuff, working on different material. When you and Teller are back on stage in Las Vegas, are you planning any big changes to the show?
I believe it'll be an all-new show. Teller and I have kept within each other's bubbles, and we've been writing like freaks. I mean, we're writing like Kerouac. And we have been working together every day. We've been rehearsing. It's very weird because usually when we rehearse, we have our crew around us. So other people clean up, other people build stuff, and other people, I don't mean to seem too pampered, but I am, you know, give us coffee. And now it's very much like the 70s, where we're in my living room building stuff out of cardboard and gaffer's tape and then sweeping by ourselves and making our own goddamn coffee. It's kind of romantic in a way. I mean, if you don't think of the reason for it, it's kind of nice for it to be just me and Teller again. And I say that, and I'm sure you understand this, with nothing but respect for our crew and love for our crew and a longing to get back to working with them. That all being said, it's kind of nice to be two guys in a room again, trying to think of wacky stuff we're going to do on stage. And, of course, we're developing a show with no audience contact, and that's also fun. Every time I use positive words like fun and inspiring, you understand it has a footnote that says it's too bad it's happening for this horrific reason. Do I have to say it every time?
No. Not at all. Not at all. Well, you are also among, you know, the longest running headliners in Vegas right now, and you've seen the landscape.
No. The longest running headliners in Vegas history.
I sit corrected.
Good. Don't let it happen again.
Because of that, you have obviously seen your landscape change quite a bit. I wonder, other than the obvious challenges of relaunching shows and sort of rebuilding Vegas as travel and tourism come back around, do you think this year's shutdown is going to have long-term effects on Vegas shows and the way performers and producers approach their work?
I can't imagine I have an idea on this that is any different from any of the ideas you have. I, of course, hope people will rush back to Vegas in celebration, and I, of course, worry that they won't. And I believe, although I am considered an eccentric and maybe even crazy, I believe this is an opinion that I share with every single resident of Vegas.
Well, I don't know if I would say crazy, but I do think that you're a little bit of a rarity because you are a Vegas entertainment personality, but you're also known for sharing some social and some cultural commentary from time to time in your show and in interviews like this. How are you feeling right now, since we appear to have a bit of light at the end of this pandemic year tunnel? How are you feeling about, you know, just the lessons that we've learned this year and how we can go forward from here?
Well, you know, surprisingly, I have some friends who are epidemiologists, and surprisingly, you know, we used to call George W. Bush stupid, and we were using hyperbole. We knew in our hearts he was smarter than us, but we wanted to, you know, compare him to Obama and Nixon and the other, you know, Jefferson, the other really smart presidents we've had. But George W. Bush set up a not sufficient, but greater than anybody else ever had, epidemiology pandemic response. And then Obama added to that. But George W. Bush gets the credit, but Obama added to it. And then Trump dismantled it. Every epidemiologist in the world knew that this was coming. The only thing they didn't know, they didn't know that it wouldn't be worse than this. you know, it has to do with how we treat animals and how we treat the environment and how we treat each other. And we knew there was a pandemic coming. I mean, I was certainly talking about it with people a huge amount in the 90s and even more in the early part of the century. And I was worried, of course, it was going to be one of the duck flu variations going to chickens, you know, the N1, the NFs coming out. People didn't, a lot of the smart money wasn't on the coronavirus. But, of course, there was SARS, which taught us an awful lot, and which we seemed to learn very few lessons from. And I think it's because SARS was handled fairly well, it did not put, it did not give everybody religion on the epidemiology thing. Now we've had this, and the only hope I have is that this will prepare us for the next one that's worse. And with Trump in office, there was no chance of that. Trump never learns from his mistakes, never has. I think you could almost end the sentence with Trump never learns. And now, of course, George W. Bush does not seem stupid because he's actually seen what it's like to have a president who is not smart, who does not have processing power above the average American. And that's astonishing. I never thought we'd see that. Probably good that he's not that smart because with the lack of morality and with the lack of compassion, empathy, and shame, intelligence would have been a negative thing for the country, perhaps. I also feel bothered by this because I know Trump not well, but not badly. And I also, in my sleepless nights, are able to grab a small amount of blame for going on TV and pretending I had a respect for a man as a joke and as a television bit, as improvisation. I pretended to respect him, whereas I knew he was a dipshit. But I never imagined that my pretending improv was going to be part of a much larger thing that gave the impression that a failure was successful. Now, I don't want to appear grandiose and self-serving. My culpability is tiny. But all those who worked on Celebrity Apprentice have a very small amount of culpability. As soon as he ran for president, of course, I used every platform I had to say he was not suited for that job. And then he took a long time proving that. I now think with Biden, who I guess in another 3 hours will have 270 Electoral College votes, I would have never thought that I would support Biden. It is astonishing that I do. But what Biden does have is a quality that 5 or 6 years ago I didn't cherish in a leader. And now maybe the most important, he seems to have empathy and kindness that is actually from his heart. Not to the level that Obama, who I will add parenthetically, I disagreed with on an awful lot, but I did not disagree with his heart ever. But I think George W. Bush had compassion and kindness. But that's all Biden needs. And I hope we, all of America, can find a way to love the people who voted for Trump. Those among us who voted for Trump. Those of us who voted for Trump. Because with global warming fucking us in the ass and a pandemic, it still seems nothing is more important than America and the world loving each other. And I think that Biden may be able to facilitate that in a small way. Now, when there are forced stabbings and gunshots and overt racism and people being anti-science and anti-facts, I might sound like a crazy person, but still, being a pathological optimist, I see a huge amount of light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that we might be able to boomerang back from all the hate into a certain amount of compassion and love. And by the way, when I said that Biden should show kindness for Trump supporters on my podcast, I get the most hate mail I've ever gotten, which if that doesn't discourage you.
Yeah, we keep talking about empathy and kindness. And I feel like as much as you put that out there, you get back the opposite of that. And that is truly discouraging.
Yeah, some people say that the worst thing Hitler did was turn his enemies into him. And I think we see some of that in Trump, in that my liberal friends are brimming with hate and bigotry. And it breaks my heart. You know, Mick Jagger saying, all your sickness, I'll just suck it up, throw it at me, I'll just shrug it off. And he was talking about that romantically, but I keep thinking that politically, it's what we need to do now. I am trying my best to, when punched directly in the face, to keep moving forward. And I do think there's hope. I mean, Trump had to work very, very hard. I mean, I lived on the streets of America for 2 years, homeless. I have been in jail, and I have never, ever met anyone or been in the room with anyone so completely lacking in kindness and shame. I have been with biker gangs that were stealing arms and dealing drugs, and I never saw anyone without a twinge of shame and kindness. And I'll tell you, seeing in Trump is amazing. And also never seen anyone who completely lacked a sense of humor. Completely. I've never seen that before. And it was very disconcerting to be in a room with that. I mean, if you want to call humor, boy, that chick is fat, then he does have that. I don't consider that humor.
Yeah, I think most people do not. Now, what do I know?
I am optimistic. Having given you no reason for my optimism, I have it.
That's it for this year for the Sun on the Strip. Thank you so much for listening. Whether this is your first time listening or if you've been with me for a while, I really appreciate your support. And if you want to support this pod, you can go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the Sun on the Strip. Maybe leave a rating or a review. I also want to thank the editorial and digital teams at the Las Vegas Sun for letting me do this and helping me along. I want to thank Penn Jillette and all of my amazing guests this year on the show. I honestly didn't know where this was going to go, but these conversations have kept me going, and I appreciate the people in this industry more than I could ever express. Please be safe. Have a happy holiday season. Be safe. And I hope you'll come back again in January 2021. Cheers. Be safe.